Petrovic who volleys it into the top corner.
When we talk about Gaza, we're talking about nearly half of the population is children. And those children don't have anything to do with this war. So it's for me, because I have a responsibility also to go bring food, bring water, help my families.
So that's the start of a normal day in Gaza before going to report on what has been happening on the ground. We have to come. We are now I'm just walking to reach Al-Aqsa Martyrs Hospital where I usually report. And just like two massacres occurred overnight and with around probably 40 people have been killed around Gaza, in central Gaza, there in the north. You can look how difficult our life is. The streets are laden with sewage and litter. You can see how people are suffering every single day. They're queuing up for water. They can't find food. They are living amid the pools of stagnant sewage and litter around them. So they're lacking everything. So it's very expensive. Like we usually, before the war, we used to bring kilos of vegetables, but it's impossible to buy things in kilograms. We don't have enough food for me, for my family. We are rationing ourselves to very little every day. When we reach times that we had to eat bung-infested flour to eat canned beef, specialized for pets. It's just candy cutting again, because even for myself, so it's not only for the children, because everything is too expensive, and it's very tasty for me, I think. I've just arrived at the hospital to go and report on what has been happening in Gaza, in the north or in central Gaza, which the Israeli military says it's a safe humanitarian zone, although it's not, because at least around 10 people here have been killed in an overnight strike in Al-Nusayrat refugee camp. And particularly those camps, Al-Nusayrat, Al-Maghazi, Al-Buraj, and even Dar al-Balah, those camps have been relentlessly hit over the course of time, particularly during the past 7 days. And here is the press vest that I'm going to wear moments later to deliver the report. And here is the logo. It's quite ripped apart because it's been, you know, it's been used so much. I'm just going to prepare myself for the report. So it's very important always to bring some important details, particularly stats issued by the Gaza Media Office, that more than 190 journalists have been killed. So here comes the risk of being a journalist in Gaza. You are absolutely risking your life to deliver a message, to deliver the message of those severely brutalized and traumatized people, new people, and it's your duty to do so. In West Gaza City, in Al Zaytun neighborhood, the fighter jets and Israeli vehicles continue opening fire and unleashing volleys of projectiles. The ideas of being killed or being bombed or targeted at any second during the current time are still chasing you everywhere. They can't really vanish or fade away from your mind, because you're thinking about those Israeli warplanes are hovering in the sky every single second. Fighter jets are there. Drones keep pulsing, like blowing your mind away. Today is an anniversary that I really want to forget, because Israel, on this day last year,
killed my very dearest friend Al-Hassan Matar. He wasn't even a friend, he was more than a friend. He was a brother, he was my companion. He was everywhere with me. I do remember how he was so connected with Liverpool in particular, and he was loving Sadio Mane and Mohamed Salah. So I'm sure that he will be so happy and ecstatic about the current situation of Liverpool. Israel didn't even kill him, but killed everything related to him, his dreams, destroyed his dreams, destroyed his house, and, you know, claimed his life and many others like him, not only Al-Hassan. So Al-Hassan is just one example in this life. So it's just another blood-soaked day here in Gaza, where, as always, more people have been killed, others have been wounded. It's heartbreaking. So I've just arrived to one of the tented camps with my friends, where we usually watch football together after doing some reporting at the hospital or elsewhere. So we're gonna watch some football. So here it is, Arsenal play in Monaco. It gives you so much energy to, you know, to watch football games, because you don't have any other options. And football is life, to be honest, not only for me, but for these people. There in the stands, fans in Gaza would usually gather to watch their favorite teams and cheer on their players. These stadiums used to erupt every single weekend in Gaza. But now the story is completely different. Football unites everyone, and that's why I'm very insistent on bringing the Palestinian cause up to the world, up to every single one, through football. That's why I want to continue. That's why I became an avid football fan. And I do hope that I will be, and I will resume doing the reporting in football, the thing I really, really love. Every journalist in Gaza is a hero to me, and you must recognize that. You must really appreciate them for everything they do. So Palestinian journalists and Palestinians overall are dreaming to live, but while all the world are living to dream. So we need to talk about this, and we need to talk about those heroic journalists that deserve everything you can really do for them, because they are telling you the truth.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program.
Ask the followers of the remembrance if ye know not.
You are listening to the program The Key on Iran Radio with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. Welcome to our program, The Key, here at IRIB English Radio. Today on The Key, we're going to be looking at a question which a lot of people ask. And that question is this: what are the duties incumbent on the Shia in their interaction with people? In order to answer this question, we can take inspiration from the hadith which have been narrated regarding this topic. In one beautiful hadith, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said this: O Abdul A'la, O Abdul A'la, this was a person, I guess, one of the companions of the Imams, perhaps. The Imam says, give my greetings of peace and the mercy of Allah to my Shia. And tell them, Allah has mercy on the servant who incites love in the people towards himself and towards us when attracting them towards Islam, by displaying to them that which they already like and by keeping them from that which they would reject. So this hadith is a little wordy. I mean, it's a little complicated, the translation of it. What it means is this, that the Shia, they should invite people towards Islam, and in doing so, when they do this, they should create within the people who they're inviting towards Islam, they should create love. Those people should begin to love those people, the Shia, and also the Imams, alayhi salam. They shouldn't do something, when they're calling people towards Islam, they shouldn't act in a way that the people start abhorring them and abhorring Islam and abhorring the maktab of the Ahlul Bayt, alayhi salam. How should they do this? By displaying to them that which they like. They should display and act with them and behave with them in a good way, in a good manner. They should act in a way that, you know, people like. And keeping from them that which they would reject. Or this could mean that they should act with them in a way that they would like people to act to them, with them. And they should not behave in a way that they themselves do not like, which is, you know, known as the golden rule. Act to people as you wish them to behave with you. In another beautiful hadith, Imam Sadiq alayhi salam said this: O Shia community, be an adornment for us among people, and not a disgrace to us. Right? Meaning you should act in such a way that you people, when they look at you, they recognize you as Shia, and you are an honor for the Imams, alayhi wasalam. In continuation, the Imam said, say good words to people, guard your tongues, and restrain yourselves from mindless chatter and offensive speech. Right? So this, in the end of the hadith, the Imam mentions an example of how we should behave well. He says that, you know, your tongue should be restrained, and you shouldn't, for example, you should be aware of the sins of the tongue, such as lying, backbiting, slander, these kind of things. And also uttering offensive speech. And also saying stupid things and mindless chattering with people in mindless ways. These are some of the ways that the Shia should interact with other people. Thank you for joining us on The Key. We were looking at the duties incumbent on the Shia in their interaction with people in the light of the hadith of the Imams, alayhim wassalam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
You just listened to the program, The Key, on Iran Radio, with Sheikh Shiraz, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
You can also send your questions to englishradio@irib.ir.
It's life as you know, you reap what you sow. And when you do good, Allah will protect you and stop you falling down. Allah, we surrender.
fortune of peace to set me free from my iman to raise. Allah, we surrender. I'm always looking out for the sign to honor you and make you proud. Together we will shine. Make dua, praise Allah. Our iman will grow. Inshallah, we will go far. There's a long way to go. We praise Allah, it's from the heart. Love will keep us whole. When you're feeling down, you know the way to go.
Good afternoon to all of our listeners. This is Iran Radio. Greetings from Tehran. Today is Tuesday, 15th of July, 2025, corresponding to 24th of Tir 1404 on the Iranian solar calendar and 19th of Muharram 1447 on the Islamic lunar Hijri calendar. We start off this hour's programs with Youth Station, a program all about young people and dealing with topics related to youth. Next is Israel Watch. The program critically analyzes Zionist media reports about the current events and issues in the West Asia region. That will be followed by Back to Reality. In this roundtable discussion, young Muslims are invited to discuss some pertinent religious and social issues of today's Islamic world. Our varied radio productions feature will be next.
Start.
Movement.
Speak.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim.
I am a Muslim.
Islam my deen.
Islam my deen.
Allah my Lord.
Allah my Lord.
His word Quran.
His word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet.
Muhammad Prophet.
Praise be upon.
Praise be upon.
I am Muslim for all.
Welcome back, dear listeners. You are listening to IRIB English Radio, and this is Youth Station. I'm Asma, and I'm so happy to be here with Nahid.
Same here.
How are you?
Good. A little bit tired, but still great.
Ah, tired. Yeah, I know that you're a hard-working girl, so you must be tired. You know, because the speed of life is getting so high, and we have to actually moderate ourselves and manage this timing, and this is the part that becomes so difficult.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why we feel so tired sometimes, actually. But anyway, is it a thing that is related to only our era, our time, or no? In past also, people felt this tired.
Could they even label us as lazy people? It drives me mad.
You know, I think they label us as lazy because in past people did stuff that was more tangible, like,
yeah,
they went
more
to
physical.
The field, more physical. Yeah, very true. Like they went to the from the very morning they started,
yeah,
they had to go through too much of drudgeries.
Yeah,
like right now there are machines helping us, But it doesn't mean that we are less active than them.
Yeah, you know, recently I was talking to my nutritionist. As you know, I've been on a diet last year. Mm-hmm. And again, I was just like rechecking my health with him. And then he started by just blaming, okay, you young people are lazy because you don't walk. And I was like, okay, I'm not taking some tools. I'm going to the land for farming every day. Yeah. But still, I'm working.
But that doesn't mean I'm not active.
Yeah, I'm doing the things that you cannot even imagine. I'm managing lots of things that you can't just time them. You cannot manage this time for those plans that we young people are doing.
Yeah.
So I think the problem is this, that sometimes the previous generations, not all of them, of course, like our parents are seeing our plans and they are fascinated by how the young people today are managing lots of things.
Managing everything.
Yeah, I know a 19-year-old girl who is a teacher, who is a translator, and at the same time she works at a company. I mean, full-time job at the same time, two part-time jobs. So, and she studies.
Yeah.
So when we just look at them, in the past, it was just simpler. The definition was simpler.
I guess what they blame us and accuse us of being is not being lazy. What they mean is actually maybe not being spirited enough to show it.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we are not lazy people. Like, it's very clear that we're not lazy, but maybe we're not making too much of a voice out
and
of it.
Our
like,
era
it's
has
not
changed.
So busy. Yeah.
No, you can't see our effort. Mm-hmm. One person from outside cannot simply see what we are doing. They look at us as people who are just sitting on a chair all day, maybe. And they say, okay, this person is lazy. Just because the work of the young people today is not physical. Because they're not walking the whole time. Even if they are, it's not visible.
Exactly. The same thing that I was just trying to say, that maybe right now, because of us not doing physical stuff, too much of physical stuff that is so tangible. Like, you know, the problem with people is that if you do not show them you're running, you're too much working, they would not believe it, and they would take you as a lazy person. Yeah. Specifically, they accuse the youngsters, but they forget about the fact that, okay, time has changed, and these youngsters have got the planning for their time, and they do things mostly with their cell phones or while they're sitting in front of their laptops or computers. So there is no longer that much of a need for you to be in a hustle and bustle in front of people. That's why they would take you as lazy.
Yeah, and I would always try to challenge this stereotype that young people are lazy. Because I think even today, because of the problems of the world, because life is being more complicated, I think even young people are more hardworking than the past. In the past, the way was clear. Wow. I mean, I'm not saying that they were just being comfortable, everything was ready. No, of course not. They had their own problems, but the way of life was clear and simplified.
Was simpler.
Yeah, it was simplified.
That was really
for them.
Simpler.
They knew, okay, I had to wake up every morning, go to school, come back home, help my mom, and then in the afternoon do the homework, and day was over. I mean, no other pressures from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
But today, imagine the life of a teenager, even a teenager at the age of 16, 17. They have the wants and dreams and needs that sometimes parents are not able to support them. So they know that they have to take some actions. They have to do something for the things they want, for their dreams.
Yeah.
Some of them are working.
Mm-hmm.
At the same time, they have to study because it's how life goes. They have to be educated to get a good job.
It's, you know, it's multi-factored, multi-dimensional
Now there
sort
are too many perspectives
issue.
To a simple life.
Yeah, it's a multidimensional sort of an issue that we have to consider different parts of it. But as for now, for the introduction, just believe it. Youngsters are not lazy, but they have different plannings. We go for a break and then we come back to see the changes and the differences of this generation with the past generations in the, actually in the case of laziness.
Yeah.
I was too proud to see the truth and prostrate to you until I took the first step, and that's when you opened the doors for me.
now alone. I realize what I was missing by being far from you.
So how do we define being lazy? Like, a lazy person does not go through too much of working and they are disinterested in everything. They try to distract themselves from doing the things they have to do, and they try to evade the responsibilities. But the youngsters today are evading things. Are they really not working for their life? I guess right now, even the youngsters below the age of 20, they're trying to be independent and they try to work. So is this a sign of being lazy? I don't think so. By the way, you're listening to Youth Station, IRIB English Radio.
Yeah, and there are some few examples of young people today who are who have whatever they want. Who are a little, let's say, richer than the others. So there are some examples of in every era.
I always say that there are some exceptions, but exceptions do not break the rule.
Yeah, there are some exceptions of those people who are lazy, who use the advantages of today's life, and they're just like going with the flow.
And they take things for granted.
Yeah.
Yes, I accept that even in this era, like in past. Let's, you know, compare the research stuff in today's world and then compare it to the past world, like the gone eras.
Yeah.
And today, if you want to write a piece of a research or a piece of a report, you don't have to go to libraries and then bring out different books and then be faced up with a pile of books in front of you. You don't have to go through that. No, you have internet and then you have... Just with a click on a button, you're going to get whatever you need.
Yeah, so true.
So I'm not just saying which one is better. I'm just saying that time has changed. Maybe what you did in past and that thing took too much of time from you, right now it would take only 5 minutes or maybe even half an hour.
Yeah, and this matter that everything is being faster, everything is being easier to be done, doesn't mean that we are not doing anything. It means we are doing more
and
things.
You know, I would say that even those people who would seem that they're not doing anything, you know, let me rephrase myself. Yes, maybe physically they are not doing anything, but
they
mentally they are
like
so active. Mentally they are so, so active. Even if they do not... even if they do not have a job or even if they do not share a part in society, but mentally they are pressured. And I guess this pressure, this mental pressure is way heavier than physical activity.
And you know, it comes with expectations.
Mm-hmm.
Once I was asking one of the young people, how do you manage your time? And she was 18, I guess. And she answered, I was asking her about her free time. And she said, you know, I watch my favorite TV shows and my favorite TV programs during the, when I'm eating, while eating. So I asked, okay, why while eating? You know, that it's dangerous and it's not okay for your body. And she said, because I have lots of things to do, because my parents are asking me to go to different classes. I have those computer classes. They have to go to the gym. I have a school. I have my English class. And she named lots of classes. And she said, because of all these things, because I have to be prepared. I mean, she was convinced that she has to go through a lot of things. She said, because of all those things that I have to do, I have to just keep my free time while eating. During lunch, I watch my favorite programs. So just see an 18-year-old girl is planning her time like this. Can we label them as being lazy?
No. I don't think that any kind of laziness is attached to these people of these generations.
Because our expectations are shaping them. If
you know, I told you, it's not physical, it's mental.
Yeah.
Even if they are not working or sharing any responsibility with the world outside, but they have this mental pressure which is so, so heavy.
Yeah.
And then, by the way, we have to refer to the narrations, to the Islamic narrations and this huge heritage that we have behind us. You know, laziness is always actually degraded in our religion. Like, there is no way for us to be lazy. Our prophet has always actually encouraged us to be working, to be active, to share a part in society, to be a worthy human being who is responsible and who is sharing a part in the society. Yeah. Even in our supplications, we seek refuge to God from being lazy. So I guess for all the Muslims all around the world, be it young or be it old, we're responsible for not being lazy. We yeah. have to be active in all different parts of our life.
Yeah, even Imam Ali alayhi salam in the book of Nahj al-Balagha had mentioned that we need not to be a slave to others when Allah has created us free.
Yeah.
It means we are free, we have this power, and we have this freedom. The same kind of hadith comes from Imam Ali alayhi salam, who says, value time before you lose it.
Mm-hmm.
So we are created free. We have this all time to us. So we have to value it. As a Muslim, we have this responsibility, this duty that we have to know where we are going.
Try to change the routine of your life by learning a word in a day. Even a word in a day. Like, if you're interested in another language, you could actually force yourself into learning something. Not learning language, okay, you're interested in psychology, you go read a page of psychology yeah. every day. Pick a book and then read of it. And then, you know, reading is very important. Like, the Holy Book of Quran always encourages us to think. And this brooding and pondering upon different concepts of life is such an important thing that it has been mentioned too much. Now, I'm not an expert in Quranic verses, but when you recite it, you see that many times you are encouraged to think more and more. And whatever secret God is revealing in that book, he says, it's for those who think. It's yeah, for those so who ponder. So that means it's very important to have a habit of reading books, of reading, of getting knowledge every day, of yeah, gaining exactly. that. This is very important.
And also challenging your life, not just going with the routine, challenging your life and not letting the world decide our pace.
Yeah, so we are not lazy.
Yeah, sure.
This is all for today. I hope you have just enjoyed that. I wish all of us be much more active and have a much better life. Like, to have, you know, I always say that even if you try to help a robin, a bird, like the way Emily Dickinson puts it, if I can help one robin into its nest, if I can help one heart from breaking, if I can stop one heart from breaking, then I shall not live in vain. So my life is all about the things I do, is all about my actions and my words. And I guess this way, if you try to be active in a way that you share a part in society and in the life of your dear ones, then your life is not futile and you're not called as lazy. So I wish God gives us enough of a strength to fight laziness and to be much more active in our life. And until another episode, stay healthy, take care of yourself, and wassalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about this.
We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
scared, but I won't show my fears. I keep my head high, deep in my heart. I never have any doubt about this time. Tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. I saw those rockets and bombs shining in the sky, like drops of rain in the sun's light, taking away everyone dear to my heart, destroying my dreams in a blink of an eye. What happened to our human rights? What happened to the sanctity of life?
The special operations by the resistance against occupation forces in the Gaza Strip, the repercussions of the war with Iran on the Israeli entity, and the escalation of Yemeni attacks against Zionists, in addition to normalization between Syria and Israel. These topics were the focus of commentary in the Hebrew media, which we will discuss them today with Dr. Mohsen Saleh, president of the International Association of Political Experts, joining us here in the studio. Hello and welcome, Dr. Mohsen.
Thank you very much for having me. Thank you for the whole crew and the audiences as well.
Well, ongoing negotiations regarding Gaza are still facing obstacles that prevent reaching an agreement, with the main point of contention revolving around the Murak axis, which the occupation insists on retaining control over it, while Hamas completely rejects any continued Israeli military presence in this axis. Well, Dr. Mohsen, what is the significance of the Murak axis or Murak corridor to make it that makes it so interested for the occupation to take control over it?
Well, I think this exit or corridor was created in order to make another geopolitical situation in Gaza, in order to
due to its significance
in terms of collecting the Palestinians at some point in the south and not returning to the north, in order to prepare, pave the way for the new situation in Gaza, to facilitate also their strategy for dominating Gaza and putting the Palestinians, and also trying to damage the whole tunnels in Gaza, also to try to determine the situation for the resistance, because the resistance now is going with great operations inside Gaza, and the Israelis feel that every day they say it's a difficult day. It's a difficult day. Many of these soldiers were killed or injured. Their tanks and their machines always have been exposed to all kinds of operations. So they want to try in order to push the Palestinians from the north and from the middle of Gaza into this area of southern Gaza. That's why this is important, because they want to keep it as a powerful point to besiege this southern point in Gaza for as a preparation for the future of the Palestinians in Gaza, to migrate them, to try to push them out of Gaza. That's the point, I guess. That's the Israeli point. And it seems that the Americans are perplexed, hesitant to say that, because of the Arab, the Qataris and the Turks' pressure on them in order to not let the Palestinian destiny, let's say, in Gaza in the hands of Netanyahu.
Okay,
because we see the statements from Qatar and the statements of Erdogan about the massacres and the future of Gaza.
Okay, as you're explaining, this corridor is very significant
very
and very
significant
important
for the Israelis. That's
for
why
the Israelis.
Hamas
but
is saying no.
Yes. Okay,
no.
So when Hamas is saying no, and you're explaining its geographical importance here, do you think that the dispute over the Murat corridor could lead to the collapse of the negotiations, mm-hmm. collapse of the talks for a ceasefire agreement?
Very possible, very possible. It's certain that Hamas will not agree on this issue. Especially Murag, and will not agree on other points, especially in terms of the exchange of the prisoners and the hostages. And the Israelis also, they have their point in order to say, well, our future existence in Gaza is relevant to what we plan for the future in terms of the military presence in southern Gaza. And it's a very crucial point.
Okay, resistance fighters in the Gaza Strip. Yes.
It's related to the next day.
Okay.
That's what.
However, Dr. Mohsen, resistance fighters in the Gaza Strip have become more daring in confronting Israeli occupation forces, as they demonstrated in recent special operations that resulted. As they demonstrated in recent special operations that resulted in more Israeli soldiers killed and wounded. This was acknowledged by commentators in Hebrew media. Of course, this is a very important report. It's highlighting what is behind this deliberate escalation in the resistance operations against the occupation. In your own opinion, do you think the religious element plays a pivotal role behind the Palestinian resistance escalated operations?
Well, let's say there is a kind of amalgamation between culture, religion, and fight and liberation.
Love
and
to the land.
Of course, it's their homeland.
Yes.
Gaza is a Palestinian place where they think that they should not only kill themselves.
But why was this? Why was this person focusing on the religious part specifically?
Well, that's a kind of a pillar of their mentality in order to regain their freedom and their liberation of their land and preventing the Israelis from continuing their massacres in
so
Gaza.
So basically, Israel is fighting an ideology. Israel was even analyzing his voice while Israel
from the voices of Smotrich and Ben-Gvir and Netanyahu, they are also going into a war, ideological and religious. And of course, the Palestinians, they have this doctrine, but this doctrine is sprung from their spirit to liberate their mind and their territories.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Israelis are trying to kick them out of Gaza. They are trying to massacre them, kill them every day. So the Palestinians, they have but one choice but to kill the Israelis,
okay.
the occupiers. Otherwise, the Israelis are killing them. Anyway, massacres, they are killing the children, they are killing the women.
It's a way
of
self-defense also.
Self-defense, absolutely.
Okay. The results of the Israeli-American war with Iran continue to be focused, to be the focus of analysis and commentary by Israeli military experts. Amid fears among Israelis about the future of confrontation with Iran after the large-scale destruction caused by Iranian missiles and what could happen in any future military clash. How do you see Israeli strategy towards Iran evolving?
Well, of course, animosity. They try to destroy Iran from the higher level up to or down to the soldiers or to the social matrix in Iran. So we are talking about two enemies. Iran is an enemy of the Israeli existence, especially in terms of the words and statements of Imam Khomeini, may peace be upon his soul, and Imam Khamenei, all of them, they think that these are occupiers in Palestine and they should go back to their homeland in Poland or in France or in the United States. So in 2012, the Israelis went into a conference under the title of the Shi'i or the Iranian nightmare, where they think and they thought that Iran had this position from this their existence. That's why always Netanyahu declares that.
Yeah, but what about the Iran, strategy? The strategy that the Israelis.
The strategy is to weaken Iran and to ask help from the United States.
How will they weaken Iran, Dr.
Well,
Nusser, preparing
these,
for round two of
by these strikes against the Iranian positions, posts, and the and also to try to kill. They killed leaders of the army and the Revolutionary Guards. And we are talking here about an open war with the, between Iran and the Israelis. Unfortunately, some of the Arabs, they don't understand this kind of animosity and this kind of position between Iran and
Israel. So you think that the Israelis would attack again?
They might. They are saying if the Iranians are returning to the enrichment of uranium, they will fight back. They will hit. They will strike against Iran. But now Iran is more prepared and ready for any attack to re-attack, retaliate in order to keep its security and its position. Iran, after this attack from the Americans especially, and under the auspices of the Americans, I guess the Iranians now
are stronger,
more aware, more conscious of the details of this battle or this war between Israel and
Moving on to Yemen and to the Israeli entity's inability to confront Yemeni's support front for Gaza, where a military analyst on Hebrew Media acknowledged that confronting the Yemenis without U.S. intervention is impossible. How much of a problem is it for Israel, its lack of intelligence when it comes to Yemen?
Well, they are saying they have lack of intelligence and lack of let's just say, will, and they cannot overcome the Yemeni power.
And that's why they need the American support
the
again.
The spiritual and the morale of the Yemenis is very high and very strong. The Yemeni people and the leadership of the Yemenis, and also, well, I would say most of the countries of the axis of resistance, I mean Lebanon, I mean Palestine,
yes.
I mean Yemen, I mean Iran, now they could strike, they could go and raid against Iran and Yemen, but they cannot beat them and they cannot tell them to surrender because they are stronger in terms of their doctrine and in terms of their power.
But you can obviously
power.
See, Dr. Mohsen, how they are actually begging for an American intervention.
Yeah, that's
again.
True. We the Americans, even the Americans, they went into a ceasefire, into a truce with the Yemenis because they know that the Yemenis, the Houthis, they can strike against the Americans and the British. Yesterday, before yesterday, they
yes.
have
they have hit one of these great ships. We are talking about a real battle, and the battle, and of course the Yemenis are prepared in all means, and they have the these missiles, and they are really breaking. They are breaking the let's say the morale of the whole Israelis, all the occupiers, the settlers.
Let's take a look on the Israeli social media. That commented on Yemeni front and the attacks launched by Yemeni forces on the Israeli entity.
Rania Chalom, what happened to the crew members of the ships the Houthis sank? Why does no one care about them? Why didn't anyone rush to help them? Why didn't the international community scream? Shalev Haham, I set my alarm for 5:30, but the Houthis said, let's wake the Israelis a few minutes earlier to annoy them. That's exactly what they're doing. Tali Ezra, the agreement between Trump and the Houthis was limited to not sinking American ships. The American president ultimately does not care about other countries and doesn't understand the global economic importance of paralyzing ship movement in the Red Sea and Suez Canal.
To Syria now, where Hebrew media continues to follow the ongoing talks between Tel Aviv and Jordan government regarding normalization between the two sides. Israeli commentators pointed to the gains that the occupation entity will get from an agreement with Syria. Well, do you think that Israel stands to gain this much from normalizing with Damascus? They're speaking about shaping their security reality, re-engineering the borders.
Well, I think the Turks and, of course, the Americans, they have, let's to say, handed the Syrian territories to the Israelis. And I guess the Syrian regime, new regime, Ashara, is going for naturalization, and they have declared that. They have statements about, and there are actually, overtly, they are talking with the Israelis, and their statements are not against the Israelis. On the contrary, they are against the Palestinians and the Lebanese. And I guess we have a new history in Syria.
Okay, but this normalization, what will Israel gain from it? How much will Israel gain from
it? Well, it's gaining one of the...
securing the borders to its
geopolitical locations inside the axis of resistance. I guess this is one of the weakest points of the Arab region now, and the Islamic region, and the whole liberation points. But I would say that will not weaken the doctrine and the morale and the power and the insistence of the power in Lebanon and in Yemen and in Palestine.
Okay, but
and
according
in Iran.
To your own analysis, Dr. Mahsen, do you think that the Syrians would accept this normalization?
I would say no. They will continue, especially some groups who are believing, and they have historical belief in fighting against occupation and against the occupiers and invaders of the Israelis, and also to fight against the American hegemony in Syria. Syria will not be stable, let's say, will not settle.
Julani believes that when this normalization sees the light, then that will cause... impoverished. Syria will be a better place again.
They lift the sanction. They lift all kinds of the obstacles against what? But the Syrians, they have nothing, and nobody will help this new regime, because they have plans for a future. I guess they wanna go for partition in Syria. They wanna do that because the Kurds, they have. And in their arms, but they will not surrender. The Alawis
as well.
But
the Americans don't seem to want this partition that you're speaking about.
Well, it seems that they have plans for Syria. At least partition, because the Americans are talking. Well, Barack talk about Tripoli, and Lebanon is part or under the hegemony of the new regime in Syria, actually under the Israelis and the Americans, because this regime in Syria is a puppet, is an instrument for
for the American plans and the Western plans. Would the Syrians accept that for a long time? I really think that the Syrians are freedom fighters, strugglers for life, not for American hegemony. I guess my ponder is that the Israelis will not succeed, especially we see Trump having this
yes.
tendency toward economic relations. Will probably mix the situation and make it unknown because
okay.
the situation with China, with Russia, and the Russians haven't forgotten their
okay.
presence in Syria.
Yes,
in terms of their protection of the Alawis and
okay. others. Unfortunately, Dr. Mohsen Saleh, President of the International Association of Political Experts, our time is up. Thank you for joining
Thank
us.
You.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us.
واقعیت زندگی
and try to apply them to our daily lives.
چجوری ممکنه؟
How is it possible?
از راه قرآن
by means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step brothers not the last one
هو الذی ارسل رسوله بالهدى
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion